You are listening to Something Rather Than Nothing. Creator and host, Ken Vellante. Editor and producer, Peter Bauer.
My name is Gabriel Valentin, and I am the creator of Digital Lizards of Doom and the founder of the brand new publishing company, Dizzy Doom Media. Today, I wanted to give you all a little tour of DDM and show you all of the rad stuff we have coming out. First, let's start with Level 1, Dizzy Doom, the first book in the Digital Lizards of Doom series. In this book, we meet Pineapple Pete, an ancient pineapple demon who has trapped an entire universe of characters inside a video game simulation. Unaware, the characters play out their roles as heroes and villains, bringing the famed wizard, Dizzy Doom, face to face with an evil robot known as Commander Echo. In the next book, Level 2, the story opens up just weeks after the ending of Book 1, with Commander Echo healing from a pretty severe battle. We get to learn more about Echo's relationship with his sidekick Spider-Nose and the truth behind why Spider-Nose is so loyal to Commander Echo in the first place. Meanwhile, on a far-off distant planet, our heroes find themselves in a compromising situation where Dizzy Doom must harness the power of the atomic pineapple so he can fight a giant mech gorilla in an epic kaiju showdown that will determine the fate of an entire planet of moth creatures. These two books are only the first in an 8-book series which will each take place in a different level of this video game world that this ancient pineapple demon has created. Everything we do here at Dizzy Doom Media is made for fans, by fans, and includes all of the things we love, from video games, tabletop gaming, comics, movies, and of course, music. Right now, I am currently working on several different multimedia projects, including a 21-song soundtrack with animation and a full orchestra. I'm also working with voice actors and puppeteers for the future adventures that will expand the Digital Lizards of Doom universe. I absolutely love putting these worlds together and making a place where everyone is encouraged to push their creativity to its max. So thank you so much for your support on this project. I look forward to seeing you all very soon. Be well.
We got Gabe Valentin here. You just heard his voice, Dizzy Doom Media, Digital Lizards of Doom. Gabe, super excited after that lead-in to introduce you to the Something Rather Than Nothing podcast.
What's up, brother? How's it going? Glad to be here.
It's great. So I listened to that promo, and doing a podcast about creators, you know, there's a sound universe there. There's this whole visual universe. It's colorful. There's so much creativity going on in this, and I thought it'd be a good way to start to hear about you and putting together this media. There's so much there. Tell us about what you're up to.
First of all, thank you, man. Like, it's, you know, as an artist, I know I speak for a lot of artists, if not most artists, maybe even all of artists, but it's such a slog to get this stuff out there and to dig deep in yourself and pull these things out and to, first of all, be comfortable, or maybe not even comfortable, but be willing to put them out on page. And so when people respond to it like you have, and it just means the world to myself, and I know many other people as well. So thank you so much, man, first of all.
Yeah.
It's gnarly. This stuff comes from real places. And speaking on the art, I just want to make cool stuff. Like that's just something I really, really want to do. I want to make cool art that makes me proud, that are made from stories that I'm just not getting right now. You know, D-Lod is the manifestation of years of hanging out with my friends, campfires and by the pool and by the beach, and just talking about how come no one's made a story like this yet? How come no one's done this yet? Like, oh, I really wish it'd be so cool if Zack Snyder would make something like this, or it'd be so cool if Kevin Smith would write something like this. It'd be so cool if blah, blah, blah. And so after years and years and years of that, I just finally said, I'm going to do it myself, and I'm going to do it for myself, just because I was just really missing this story. You know, I love Star Wars. I love high fantasy. I love space adventure. And I love Final Fantasy is one of my favorite video game series of all time. And I just wasn't really getting that from a lot of the graphic novels I was reading and looking for. I mean, we have Saga, which is amazing.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong, but it's amazing in a different way.
Yeah.
I really wanted this. I wanted something that made me feel like a kid again. I wanted something that made me feel excited to wake up on, you know, Friday morning or get home by Friday afternoon so I could watch Batman Beyond or Static Shock, whatever, Ninja Turtles, you know. So I really wanted something that made me feel like that again, and I hadn't experienced. Or spending the night at your friend's house on Friday nights, you know, after a long school week, and then just playing video games all day, Saturday and Sunday, man, I just missed that. So I was trying to make basically like a bite-sized pill of that and giving that to the world, and anyone who would listen or read. So through that came all these different art forms. We have the story came first, which a lot of people still don't know about, but the story came first. I was writing this story, Digital Lizards of Doom, and I didn't have the finances or anything in place to produce a graphic novel the way I wanted to. So I knew a lot about music, and I had been in bands. So I started just writing songs about the characters and creating a world for them and kind of like an ecosystem for them to exist in, with the hopes that when it came time to expose the world to the book, I would kind of already have this built-in fan base. So I did that for years. I ended up getting picked up by Noise Cartel Records. The music kind of took on a life of its own, which was just totally blew my mind. And we started touring regularly, playing with so many different musicians. Our first album had, I think, 7 or 8 different features on it from musicians all over the world. It was just totally wild. And then, you know, that kept going on. And then I was like, wait, like, this is awesome, but people still don't know the story. And I'm in a better place financially, and I have a little bit more connections now. So I buckled down and I finalized the first 4 books. It's, we're on book 2 right now. That's about to come out. But all 8 books are written, which is awesome. I'm really stoked about that. And so I finalized the story. I had it finite. I made the maps. I made the technology. I made the ships and everything that I wanted to include. Made the Bible, I guess, basically, of the universe. And then we started getting to work. I got hired artists and editors and everybody to help me make the first book. I pitched the first book to Clover Press, which was they're founded by Ted Adams and Robbie Robbins, the founders of IDW, and they picked it up, and we sold a couple thousand copies in 1 month, and then now we're doing the second book, and it's just, and I'm no longer with Clover Press. We're all friends and everything, but I went out on my own and started my own publishing company, and I just needed a little bit more freedom to make the music, to make the animation that I want to do, to make the spin-off series that I want to do. So I just kind of took it back, and we're, like I said, we're getting ready to release book 2, and it's just an accumulation of music, visual art. We're working on video games and apps, animation. It's just a universe where everyone's welcome, and people who enjoy all of these different things that make us nerds can come and have a safe place to enjoy and have fun in. So,
yeah. And you know, there's, thank you for all of that. It's really inspiring and exciting. And one of the things I mentioned to you was like all the different components that brings that universe to life. And, thinking about like on this podcast, obviously I talked to a lot of different type of creators, but the conversation is a bit unique in the sense of like the integration of these different forms into the universe. I heard a lot about what you're saying, Gabe, you know, as far as like, you know, being able to be a kid, right. To enjoy yeah. yourself, you know, as an adult, we forget that. And
we're taught not to, you know,
we get busy. One of the things I wanted to mention to you, because I was thinking about all the different components of what you do, I was talking to my son, who's a gamer. He loves fantasy, loves games, and of course, games are so advanced right now. I was telling him about when I'm 48, so my first computer was a Texas Instrument computer. My favorite game was
awesome.
Tunnels of Doom, which was a very simple dungeon crawler of 10 levels, and you loaded the game with a cassette data into the computer, and wow. it was a total of 32K, both the game and going into it. But it was a full like universe, and I was talking to my kiddo, and I'm trying to explain this. I'm like, this is of such a different time and era. It's difficult to explain data loading in through a cassette tape. So obviously so much more at your disposal now, but I wanted to go to the kind of like seminal question I ask at the beginning of, you know, formal interview. When you were born, talking about you and your kid, when you were born, were you an artist when you were born?
So, you know, I used to say no to these types of questions, but like, or when people would ask like, oh, when did you know you wanted to be an artist? And I don't really know when I knew. I think I knew when I was about, I want to say when I was about 13 or 14 is when I think I knew. But before then, and again, I used to say no to this question, but I think from birth, I was. I've always been a storyteller. So not an artist. Like, I wasn't really writing anything down or drawing. I can't draw for crap. Everyone needs to know that. I can't draw to save my life. But
I can't either, Gabe. We share that of drawing.
It's so bad. I mean, you should see. I wish I had something. You should see my storyboards, because I do all the storyboards for the book, and I am just constantly apologizing to my artists. Like, no, that's Commander Echo's head. That's not another planet. You know, I'm just like, you know, I like draw things like. It's like inside, but there's stars. No, those aren't stars. Those are supposed to be torches. Like, oh, okay. So I do all the storyboards for the graphic novel, but it's like stick figures and bubbles. But, I think at a very young age, I grew up, my family and I, weren't very, financially well off. And we weren't like poor, like starving or anything like that. You know, my dad he worked for the city of San Diego, and, you know, it wasn't like we were scrounging for food or anything like that. So I don't want people to get that impression, but we didn't really have a lot of, we had enough to get by. That's basically what we had. And we lived on the land a little bit. Like, we had chickens and, goats, and we had our own vegetables and things like that. And so growing up was very interesting, because we didn't have a TV for a long time. And once we even got a TV, it was VHS tapes. They wouldn't even buy a DVD player. they bought whatever the cheapest thing was because they didn't really watch TV. So they just bought a VHS player. So I actually got to grow up with VHS, which is pretty cool because I know a lot of people my age didn't. So so that was pretty cool. And then through that and kind of running out of content because we have a very limited amount of what we could watch on TV, unless I went to my friend's house or my cousin's house or grandma's house. When I went to grandma's house, it was just cable. She had cable, so it was just like we watched everything. Like I was just glued to the TV. But it was almost like I was hibernating, you know, or getting ready for hibernation, like no cable hibernation, just like a squirrel just cramming as much TV as I could. But no, because of that, I never, I just kind of told my own stories to myself, to my family. I just would like make things up. I'd be like, oh yeah, I saw like a dragon today. He was like in the sky and I tried to follow him, but you know, I kind of lost him around here. And I'm pretty sure there's a cave in my yard somewhere. In our yard where this dragon lives, I'm going to find him, you know? And I would just like, they were so outlandish that I hope people thought or people like knew I was being silly, but you know, I think there's probably some times where my parents worried about me, but I would tell these stories and I would tell stories for other people. I'd try to make people laugh and I would try to distract myself too with these stories and just try to create this universe that I wanted to live in instead of the current one that I was in. So yeah. I used to say I wasn't, or know that I wasn't a creator when I was born, but now I've really changed the way I look at that because I think I've always just been a storyteller, just naturally. Even when it came to getting out of trouble, the ridiculous stories that I would come up with to try to lie and get out of punishment was just, I mean, no one in their right mind would ever believe the things I said. So, it was fun. It was like fantastic and it was an escape. And since I didn't have, I always wonder if I would have had access to these things, like if I would have been able to watch more TV or if I would have been able to play more video games or anything like that, if things would have changed. So I really don't know. My first console, like my first TV console, this is no joke, was a PlayStation 4.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I grew up because my parents were like, no video games, mm-hmm. you know, all that stuff. So I grew up playing portable handhelds because they wouldn't let me have a TV in my room. And they wouldn't let, like a friend could spend the night and we could hook up a console to our TV that night. But when he went home, it went home with him. Yeah. So for me, my uncle got me a Game Boy Pocket, like late 90s, I think, and maybe early 2000s. And that just changed my life. And it was Game Boy. It was just Game Boy, PlayStation Portable, whatever portable system I could get my hands on. So most of my video game memories are from portable handhelds because I wasn't allowed to play, you know, console games. So I always wonder if like these things influenced me in such a strong way. I mean, I fell in love with Final Fantasy because you couldn't really play shooters on a Game Boy. They didn't work.
Right.
I played Legend of Zelda and, you know, that's the stuff I played. And it's bizarre how much that stuff had an influence on me. So,
yeah. I mean, you bring up so many fascinating questions. Like you said, I mean, if you define yourself as, you know, like a storyteller and seeing yourself having that attribute, sometimes, like right now, there's so many stories that are being told to us and we can adopt those mythologies and those type of stories. But maybe if we're not exposed to them or we want to create our own, you know, there's this whole other space over here where you're like, this is the universe I'm creating, not one that's gonna be set for me. So I think how I could see that and how you develop Digital Lizards of Doom is going to be very particular to your history, like in your life. I asked some big questions in this show, and the one I like a lot about art, I like to apply it to one of my passions, which is, you know, graphic novels, comic books. When you talk about the universe that's created, when I was a kid, that was the universe that I went into and I adored. And I got that from my dad, you know, who loved comics. When we start talking about art, and I do it in the show, everybody kind of gets, what, you know, which is art? Is this art? Is that art? Or is this high art or low art? Or defining yourself as an artist, I don't paint, or all that type of thing.
Yeah.
The big question, as I'm just mumbling along here, is what is art?
What is art? You know, my brain goes to this very simple, just kind of quantifying explanation. I feel like art is anything that somebody creates that is inspired by an emotion, an event, a memory, a person, inspired by anything, basically. Like, you know, even if I don't appreciate the art, like, I remember one of the wackiest things I think I've ever seen was in New York. There was this museum of like high fashion art, or I don't know if it's like, I don't think high fashion was the right word, but just this, you know, high quality next level art. And it was a bed. It was a bed frame with a mattress on it covered in bologna. And like the whole thing was covered in bologna. And it may have been a statement, like a animal rights statement. I'm not sure. I got that vibe. I didn't spend too much time on it.
Yeah.
But, you know, people were kind of like, then I heard about it later in the news, and people were like kind of dogging on it. And, you know, I'm kind of like, I don't know, man. Like, I don't get it. Maybe if the artist explained it to me, I would. But that's still art to me. Because that person, something happened to that artist that caused him to go out and make these things. He spent time on it. You know, he designed this thing. I don't know if you heard recently, there's a guy who sold an invisible statue, invisible sculpture. Did you hear about that?
I did.
And my friend, you know, because we've actually had this conversation a couple times. And he's like, okay, so even you have to admit that this isn't art. This is something invisible that the guy created. Like, you can't even like bullshit your way through this, right? Like, and I'm like, and he's like, no, like, what? Come on, man. Like, there's no way this is considered art. And I said, dude, here's the thing, though, that people keep missing. I'm not even saying I like what that guy did. I'm not even saying like I think it's a cool thing. But what I am saying is that he provided an experience for this individual, whoever purchased that item, that invisible item. He is now creating an experience for how many other people who are going to walk into that guy's home and say that, and leave that guy's home saying, we got to experience the invisible sculpture. He just created a talking point. He just created an experience. Yeah. That's art. And I'm not even saying like that I think everyone should do that, or like that I would have bought it if I had, like, cause I wouldn't have, but that's not even something I would want to do. But you have to give credit where credit's due. And I think we're in a weird time right now where like people just, everything is so black and white. I think people have really forgotten how to communicate with each other and understand each other. It's either like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever seen. This guy has an invisible sculpture. I thought it was dumb. I'll be honest. Like, when I first saw it, I thought it was kind of silly, or not dumb. I thought it was silly.
Yeah.
But the more I thought about it, and who knows, like who knows the point behind him doing this? The more I thought about it, I was like, you know, it's kind of an interesting idea. He made something, and here I am. I'm affected by it because we're talking about it. So like I got to experience on it, that art form on a small level. So I think art is just anything that causes you to create. Now, some might argue that because it's invisible, he didn't create anything, but he created an experience. So he still created something. You know, the only reason books are selling is because you buy a book and the words are written down. But, you know, when we were in the caveman days, we just shared these stories with each other and drew pictures on the wall. So, you know, that's not real. That's not something tangible. You can't like, you know, besides the drawing, of course, you can't just tell a story to somebody. You know, jokes are free, but that's art. Right. That's right. An art form. So yeah, I think anything that just inspires you to create is and then the form of doing so, creating the thing, would be art. And I think it's cool. I think it's interesting that stuff like that exists, but I mean, I'm trying to do it a little bit in a different way, but
make it a little bit easier than invisible graphic novel. Yeah. You know, the invisible graphic novel. I like you, Gabe, but I'm definitely looking for the Digital Lizards of Doom, not because then on the invisible sculpture, I really share a lot of your thoughts because I think what it does for me, that's philosophy right there, right? Because then we're talking about a thought, we're talking about a thing. And I would say, let's say you and I and eight other people were standing around the table and that artist said, well, here's the invisible sculpture and would you like to talk about it, right? And you're looking at it and you're being like, oh, that one's holding and it's a sword. It's holding a mighty sword. And look over at me. I'm saying, no, that's a beautiful goddess from, you know, like, and there's a conversation going on and it's like the idea of the artist is trickster, which, you know, that's always fun. It's always fun. And, maybe I'll plop in the invisible sculpture as a question in future episodes, Gabe, and you and that we'll explore what an invisible sculpture is for us. I'm fascinated. You're fascinated. We'll talk about it some more. All right. Yeah. So I appreciate your comments around what art is, and definitely a lot of questions that come out of that. What about, or say now you have an art piece, doesn't matter what it is, but I want to ask you, Gabe, what is the role of art? Like, what is art supposed to be doing for us as humans? Do you think it has a proper role, or what's its role in society?
Man, that is a really good question. I feel like it's something similar to how I feel about God is I don't think something like that should be put into a box. And I think there's people out there who would probably definitely disagree with me on that, but I don't know. I don't think it has a specific purpose. I think it can be applied to so many different things. That's what makes it so beautiful. So I think that when it comes to, you know, it can be used for evil. It can be used to tear people down. You know, someone can make something that describes a group of people or gets other people to hate a certain group of people. It can be used to lift people up. It can be used as an escape. It can be used as satire, you know, which is a very popular form of art right now, is satire and twisting the fabric of reality just enough to where you laugh at it, but it's still sad because it's something that exists or whatever. So I don't know. I don't know if there's like a proper use, but I think that's why it's kind of the it's kind of a last frontier kind of thing, because, you know, we actually just kind of talked about it, is like, what even is art? And I think it's something that hopefully stays wild, that's never really tamed. I don't even know how that could happen, but I don't know. I mean, for me personally, what I use it for is to help calm my mind. My mind is constantly racing with a lot of different things and struggling with a lot of different things. And art really, the art forms that I enjoy the most, I should say, because obviously not all art, but the art forms that I enjoy and I spend time on really help ease my mind and calm my spirit. And I think of the story of David. And David and Saul, and from the Bible, and Saul's just, he has all these, he's like crazy, and he's like killing these people and these doctors and these wizards, and he's like, I need help, like someone help me with, it sounds like he has an anxiety, you know, and he can't, nothing is soothing him. And then here comes along this guy with a harp, David. And he just plays this beautiful music, and it soothes Saul's mind.
Yeah.
And so, I think about that, and I feel like that's what the purpose is for me, is just to calm me down. It's soothing. It's comedic. It takes me to a different world. It inspires me. It makes me feel like I can go out and be powerful and do these things and accomplish wonders. And then for other people, you know, it could be a reminder of how crappy things are. You know, it could be a negative thing. It could be, or again, it could lift people up too. It could remind us that we can do better. So I don't know. That's a really, I'm gonna have to think about that some more, because that's a really awesome question. I've never really thought about what the purpose of art is.
Yeah, and I one of the things that I found, and thank you for your comments, Gabe. One of the things I found in the podcast, you know, so there's over 100 episodes right now, and of course, prior to doing it, you don't know what it is. You don't know what conversations you can have, and you don't know what journey you're going to go on. But one of the things that quickly developed, and I've talked about this before, is that really just got into psychology, healing, personal expression, like an authentic life. And it wasn't just like, what's the art thing that you made and what about that? It was like, yeah, that came out as a decisive moment in my life when I left this, created this, and I created a whole new persona. Like after that, it's like, whoa, okay, like it isn't just a painting I put up on the wall. It is a representation of a transformation. And not wanting to describe that, but just recognizing and honoring the power of that is something that I quickly learned to do, and it really connected the personal, you know, the personal to the what you create.
That's awesome, man.
So Gabe, I know I've been hitting you with the big questions.
Man, I love this.
I know you do. And we're speaking with Gabe Valentin, creator of Digital Lizards of Doom, Dizzy Doom Media. And the question I have, and you can refer to objects or people, what or who made you who you are?
Actually, I kind of know the answer to this question. There's a lot of people around me and I could list the people all day long. But there's so many. I was so fortunate to have good people in my life that helped guide me down certain paths and steered me away from other ones. And there's just way too many to name. But quantifyingly, I would probably say Samurai Jack. Samurai Jack, Superman, Batman, Indiana Jones. These were like my role models growing up. Jesus, actually. You know, there's not the surfer dude, white Jesus that, you know, we've, or like Bad Religion puts it the best, the American Jesus. I freaking love that song.
Right.
One of my favorite bands of all time is Bad Religion.
Yeah.
But not that, the biblical personification of Jesus, the man who opened his heart up to poor, rich, prostitutes, liars, murderers, thieves, and just showed religious nut jobs too, even talk to them, even talk to the religious people and tried to get them to change their ways. Like, you guys got it all wrong, man. Like, no. You know, though, God isn't expensive. You know, you don't have to pay for God. You know? He doesn't like you or love you less if you give him money. You know, it's not how it works. And so, you know, growing up with these and reading these stories, Greek mythology, I love Greek mythology. Hercules was – I got into Hercules because of Superman. You know, I had heard all of these – I had read all these Superman comics. And I was like, what a cool story. And someone was like, well, you know, Superman was based off like Hercules. And I was like, oh, didn't know that. And I'm not so sure if that's totally entirely true now, but I went back and that's how I first heard about Hercules, and I read the Hercules stories, and there's definitely a lot of similarities there. And so, yeah, man, I just, these heroes that they did not always have it easy, but they made the right decisions and they struggled and they fell and they rose again and they continued to fight and fight for people, fight for good. And these are the things that made me who I am. I want to fight for good. I want to fight for people. I want to love on people. Like, if the people that, the person that nobody else wants, because I've been there so many times. I've been the person that nobody else wants. Yep. And it hurts. It's a very hard feeling. It's a very dark and empty feeling. And if I'm around somebody, if I know them or not, I don't want that person to feel that way. If I'm there,
yep,
and I'm within arm's reach, I just want to love on that person. I want them to know that, you know, they have someone they can count on, and they can share that experience with, and someone that is happy that they exist, someone that believes in them and is happy that they are alive and alive on this earth and present on this earth. And a lot of these themes too are sprinkled throughout the Digital Lizards of Doom series. I touch on a lot of different mental health issues. Not so much, I don't try to keep it heavy handed because I still want it to be light and fun and silly. But I feel like for the people who have gone through the things that get mentioned in the book, I feel like they'll know when they read it. But yeah, man, I think it's these are the things that made me who I am, and I hope other people just want to start loving on each other, man. It's time. It's really time, man. Like, aren't you guys tired of it? You know, like, I just try to tell people that, like, aren't you tired of just hating this side because they voted for this guy, or that side because they voted for that guy, and all of this stuff just trips me out. How, and I've said this a couple times before, if you really think about it, we all want the same thing. Like everybody in the world, for the most part, wants the same thing. We want the government to stay out of our business. We don't want the government or somebody else to tell us what we can and can't do with our bodies. We don't want anyone telling us who we can and can't marry. We want to have a nice house. We don't want to be starving. Or not even a nice house. We want to be able to eat, you know, eat food and provide for our families and our friends and have friends over and enjoy and laugh and sing songs together, whatever you want to do, watch TV together. And we want to feel safe. We don't want to feel like if we go outside, we're going to get shot, or we don't want to feel like, you know, we can't go enjoy nice things because we're not rich enough or whatever it is. How is it that pretty much if you for the rest of your life ask that question around the world, I guarantee you like 99.9% of the people are going to say that that's how they feel. Right. And yet we are so divided right now. This person's mad at that person's mad at this person. And it's amazing the confusion that, I mean, the powers that be, cause I don't know who they are. I don't know who's pulling the strings or whatever. But, it trips me out, man. It trips me out that like we all pretty much want the same thing and yet we're so divided. And so those are the types of questions and stuff I try to put in my books and in my art, is like, how can we remove these lies and stuff from what we've been told our whole lives and get back to the basics of humanity and being there for each other and being united. So went off on a little bit of a rant there.
No, man, I'm just, you know, honestly, you know, listening and engaging with that. I mean, I think of a lot of what you had to say there of like the potential for art to bring empathy, right? Like art to like connect people. I heard a lot about that there. And, you know, honestly too, about even, you know, saying the word love. I deal with that, you know, I work as a union rep in my day job, and I've been involved in collective endeavors for a long time. And those collective endeavors are based on love, right? The working person is somebody that I love and respect. I want them to have a good working experience. And when you mention the word in that concept, in that context, a lot of times, particularly as a male, it's like, all right, fruity, all right, enough. You know what I mean? But for me, it's the fundamental basis of doing things. Because if I didn't love and I didn't give a shit, I don't. It's something else that I'm doing, and it's not what I'm doing. And it's connected to art as well, because I think a lot, like with you creating a universe, Gabe, and you inviting folks into it, and the color and the music, or the permission to be a child, that isn't, you know, I think it's pointed towards, you know, compassion and love and just invitation, you know,
permission to be a child. Wow. You just, dude, that is an epic sentence right there.
Oh, okay. You can take that 10 seconds. It's yours. You can.
that's amazing. Permission to be a child. That's amazing, man. Wow.
I've through recent conversations I've had with people who are experts in childhood development, who are artists, who are teachers. They see everything that kids have, that adults still have, that adults still remember. And, there, you know, there's a whole lot there. I really appreciated your comments, and you know, I think one of the things, the way you spoke about it, is something that I like, of speaking about things and maybe in an idiosyncratic way of right of like taking Jesus Christ and not saying, okay, here's a pre-described, pre-digested version. You're going to say, no, this is a personal thing. This is what it means to me. This is what I got. And that's really powerful, and I really appreciate that. Gabe, we're on a roll right now, so I'm going to go for the titular
question. Let's get it.
The titular question of the entire show, and it could be a short answer, it could be a long answer, but I don't know the answer to the question of why is there something rather than nothing?
Wow. Why is there something rather than nothing? The first thing that comes to my head is because the reason that there's something rather than nothing is so I could be sitting here right now having this experience and this conversation with you. And I would apply that to, I would try to, because I will definitely fail, but I would try to apply that to and encourage others to apply this to every aspect of life. The reason there is something rather than nothing is because you are experiencing something right there in that moment. And that's reason enough.
Yeah.
And if you look closely, you'll be able to find a reason for that lesson you're being taught, for that love that you're receiving, you know, for that pain, you know, if you're experiencing pain, and you're going through a hard time, you've been going through a hard time. And I'm preaching to the choir here. Everybody's listening. Preaching to the choir, kids. It's hard. It's really hard. It's extremely difficult to understand why we're going through painful situations. But what I have realized, I've met a lot of people all over the world, from all different parts of the world. Been to a few different parts of the world myself, and you might be going through something, and based on how you come out of it, something painful, based on how you come out of it, you might be able to bless somebody else with knowledge on how to get through it. They might not have the same tools or resources you did, but because you went through the same thing and you're the person that you are, you might be able to save somebody's life. You know, you might be a more resilient person, that this thing might not, it still hurts, but it's not the end all for you, but it might be the end all for somebody else.
Yeah.
And if you come in contact with that person and you say, hey, this is how I got through it. Have you ever heard of this book really helped me?
Yep.
This teacher really, these words really meant a lot to me. And that you might save a life in something like that. So, and it's not always that, you know, dramatic, but I would say, yeah, that's the answer. It's because something exists rather than nothing, because you needed to be here in this moment experiencing this thing.
So. Yeah. Woo. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Gabe, I want you to spend a little bit time now unwinding and unpacking how the audience, how listeners can connect with your art, Dizzy Doom Media, Digital Lizards of Doom. I want folks to know and have in their hands or in their ears how to interact with your art.
Yeah, so I think, so I've been saying this a lot lately. I've been telling people just to Google Digital Lizards of Doom. I don't know what it is, but I think it's a little bit more entertaining. People kind of get to click on what they want to click yeah. on. So if you just Google Digital Lizards of Doom, you know, our main website will come up at the top, and there's other things too. There's articles about us. There's articles about the world. There's links to music. But if you want to get in touch with me directly and quickly, I would say either email me at gabe@dlodworld.com or message me on Instagram. I'm on Instagram the most out of all of the social media platforms. So it would just be Dizzy Doom Media. And I'll be on there, and you know, send me a message, say, hey, I want to talk, or I'm going through a rough time, or I want to hear some music. It doesn't have to be something serious either. It's like, I want to know more about what the story is about. And let me know. I'll send you like a digital copy or something. You can check it out. And if you want to purchase it later, I would be honored. That'd be really cool. But yeah. And then if you're on Twitter, it's just at DLOD World. And Facebook is just Digital Lizards of Doom. And then our website is DLODworld.com. So that's pretty much it.
Thanks. Hey, normally don't ask a question after that, Gabe, but I do have a question because of the way that you describe the universe. And if I don't ask it, it probably ain't going to be asked. So I'm interested in the fact that you described of creating the Digital Lizards of Doom with music. So it had this life and started to create characters of its own and sounds of its own that way. When you started to depict in visual form all of that, did it look different from like how things had kind of developed as far as sounds or the characters or voices? Did you end up with, there's a universe here that's been created with the sound and now it looks this way? Was there a collision there?
There's definitely a couple changes, but for the most part, it hasn't changed much, which is kind of freaky. I've had the concept for Digital Legends of Doom since I think I was in high school.
Oh,
just the idea, and again, in its simplest form, not really character names yet, but I've always been fascinated with this idea that if there was, well, for one, I love trickster mythology, like from Greek mythology. I love tricksters, how they can just manipulate time, space, reality, and the effects it can have on the universe. And then, and the opposite, sometimes it doesn't have any effect. So I've always been obsessed with the idea that this trickster, this ancient pineapple demon, could basically capture an entire universe and, put it inside a video game and sell it to other universes. Like, I've just always kind of had this idea in my head. And it used to be planets. I actually wrote a song when I was 18 years old called Pirating Planets. And it's the first ever manifestation of this thought that I put out into the world. And it was with an old punk rock band I played in. And I don't know, I've just always been fascinated with that idea. And so at the core of it, not a lot of stuff in D-Lot has changed. The heroes and their motives haven't changed. What's changed has been the vehicles that get them there a little bit and the things that they might say. But for the most part, who they are hasn't changed. And mainly, I've been a little bit more open about this lately, but mainly it's because the main characters in the book are basically what I go through on a day-to-day basis in my head. It's like it's all of the different people and emotions that I want to be and that I struggle with. You know, Pineapple Pete represents this controlling personality. You know, I feel lost and I feel out of control sometimes, and I want to control everything in my world. And even though it might hurt other people, I want control. I seek control, and I have to fight that. And Dizzy Doom, who just always wants to do the right thing, he's the Superman, the Samurai Jack. You know, he always wants to do the right thing. He wants to be the hero. That's what I want to be. But Dana Deathly, she represents pain, and she wants to be a hero, but she's not sure if she's willing or has what it takes to be a hero, because she's been screwed over so many times, she's been hurt by so many people. And Warty Morta, she's the witch, and she represents pain. She represents all, she's the opposite of Dana Deathly. Dana Deathly is the one who's been through the shit,
yeah,
but is deciding to do the right thing anyways. Wardy Morta is the one who's been through the shit, but she's letting it change her into more evil. And it's this constant struggle I have myself. It's like, you know, someone hurts you, someone lies to you, someone lies to your face, screws you over. You want to, like, you know, you want to get back at them. You want to, like, screw them over, and you got to fight that, because that's just going to lead you down a dark path, you know? And so, yeah, it's like these revenge fantasies almost. So because of that, the characters haven't changed that much, because they're very real. They're very real conversations I have with myself. And this book, in a way, is basically therapy for myself, and hopefully other people as well.
Definitely. And that's the component that holds so much power, you know, as we tell stories and see things, and or music, whatever way it reaches us. Why you're doing what you're doing and why I'm doing what I'm doing, I think.
Yeah.
Everybody, we've been talking to Gabe Valentin, and I really appreciate your time, Gabe. I appreciate being introduced to your work and art. You'll recognize the position I'm in right now of wanting to grab at everything and everything that's in that universe. So I just got to be patient, take some time, grab this. That's the way that I am. I like to go all in on it. And thank you for, you know, kind of helping me and the listeners kind of take a little, you know, take a peek in about how art's created and why you're doing it. Super pleased, Gabe, for you to appear on the podcast.
Oh man, it's been an honor, dude. We got to do this more often, man. We got so much stuff to talk about, so we'll have to have like a part two or something like that.
I would very much like to. And heck, there's so many levels of D-Lot or Digital Lizards of Doom. There's so many levels, and you just keep going. Each we'll keep doing each game level and see where we get, brother. Okay.
Sounds good, man.
Thanks so much, Gabe. We'll talk soon.
We'll talk soon, man. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
This is Something Rather Than Nothing.